Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to be talking a little bit about Unity and porting your game to the Windows Store and Windows Phone.
Yep, that's right.
I'm really excited to be here today. My name's Mickey McDonald. I'm an indie game developer and technological evangelist with Microsoft. You know, I've spent a lot of my time building templates and examples to show other people how to do these fun things. You know, I get a chance to get up and as well and present at a lot of conferences. So I've had a chance to talk a lot about Unity in the past, so hopefully this will be very knowledgeable for you. I'm here today with Brian.
I'm Brian Griffiths. I'm a software engineer and game developer. I've worked quite a bit in the industry in the past 12 years. Worked with most of the major publishing companies, you know, Microsoft, Sega, THQ, Activision, Blizzard. And most of my time is spent with the last gen of platforms, 360, Wii. You know, I've rolled out games on the Mac, the mobile platforms, things like that. And most recently, pretty much led the development of Rollers of the Realm, which is a little indie action-adventure role-playing game, I guess, is a good way to describe it, produced by Phantom Compass. But nowadays, I spend most of my time developing and instructing the future developers that are looking to get into video game development, and that at Trias College in Canada. So.
Awesome, yeah. So you've had some experience with Unity in the past, too?
Yes, yeah, quite a bit of experience. Yeah, Rollers of Realm actually was done completely in Unity as well.
Yeah. Cool, so let's take a look at what we're going to be looking at today. So first up, we're going to talk about getting started. We'll go through that a little bit, followed up by things to consider when porting. After that, we'll look at dealing with a dual runtime environment, followed up by supporting Windows 8.1, supporting Windows Phone, using some splash screens, and finally we're going to look at some live tiles.
Live tiles. Those are good.
So I just wanted to mention real quick, just so we have some clarification on it, we're probably going to be doing this a little quicker than it was posted online. So what we're looking at shooting around is we're going to try to do the first four modules in about 3 hours. We'll break for a nice meal break, and then we'll come back and we'll try to wrap up the rest in about 2 hours.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, great. So let's talk a little bit about the expectations that we have for you guys today. obviously, the target audience for this is going to be students, beginners, indie developers, even pro devs. You know, everyone's using Unity these days, so we're, you know, running the gambit, so to speak. You know, you want to make sure that you have a desire to port your Unity games to Windows Store. That's a good idea, you know, when you're getting started with this. Suggested prerequisites, you know, basic knowledge of the Unity game. Today we're really not going to be doing an intro to Unity.
That's right.
This is more of a porting your game to Unity, so we expect that you have a little bit of knowledge and experience with Unity and understand what the editor does and what it's, you know.
That's right. And we will be showing you a Unity game that we've just put together quickly, a little sumo wrestling game, and then we'll show you how the steps to port that over and use it as an example and so on. So there will be a little bit of Unity development showing you and showing what's going to happen and then showing you where you can take that just so that you can see that we do have all the, you know, common things you might see in a game that you've already built or whatever and that you want to port over. So.
Yeah. And obviously one of the requirements we're looking for today is you want to have that drive, you know, to port your game and basically reach a wider audience by doing so. Yep. And of course it's nice to have some snacks and beverages on hand. We're going to be talking a little bit, and you're probably going to want to munch on something while we're chatting. So let's talk a little bit about the MVA community. Obviously, you guys know what that is. You're watching us on the MVA website. But if you haven't had a chance, you definitely want to sign up for this. It's really cool. It's got a lot of online learning
opportunities
yeah. Definitely, for, you know, everyone, IT pros, developers, like. It's over 1 million registered users already, which is pretty impressive.
I think I saw 1.5 now.
Is it 1.5 now?
Yeah,
wow, just a climbing. That's awesome. And yeah, you can earn some points while you're watching us and listening to us chat about Unity today. You can click the link or follow the link there and enter the code Unity Game.
Of course, you can't click that link on the live stream.
You can't click the link on the live stream, but yes, you can.
If you have the shared
I'll leave
slides.
It there for a quick second so they can copy it down.
That's true. Or the shared slides, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take a look at getting started. So our goals for the day, we're going to take a look at that, followed up by we'll talk about a little bit about getting ready to port with Unity.
And other things like that. Where you just sort of got to get your ducks in a line before you start.
Yeah, what you want to basically think about when before you start porting. Then we'll take a look at the specific tools and stuff that you need to download for Windows 8.1 as well as Windows Phone. If you guys want to follow along and have a copy of the code that we're going to be using today, you can download it at my GitHub here, GitHub.com/scruffyfern/sumoblocks.
Make sure you spell fern properly.
Yeah, you definitely want to make sure you spell...
Or differently, I guess.
Yeah, differently. I spell fern a little differently than the rest of...
the world.
Yes. So I'll leave that up there so they can copy that down for a second, and then we'll jump into our goals.
So, on a scale of 1 to 10, how hard is a port Unity game?
Oh, it's quite simple, really. You know, I'm shocked. When I first started doing this and I ported my first game over to the Windows Store, I was literally shocked at how quick and easy it was. You know, you're obviously going to hit some hiccups, right? You know,
when
porting, that generally happens with anything, right? Mm-hmm. But overall, it was a pretty painless process. And that's kind of why we're going to be a little bit shorter today, because it is that easy, right? So it's hard for us to sit up here and talk forever about something that's that quick and simple to do.
That's true.
So our goals for today, obviously we're going to examine the process of porting your Unity game to the Windows Phone and Windows Store. We'll learn how to implement some advanced features. So we're going to take a look at, you know, share, live tiles, and we're even going to look at extending the default splash screen. We're going to want you, you know, hopefully you're going to increase your knowledge around the porting practices, and we'll take a little bit of time to talk about that. We're going to point you towards some resources at the end there so you can continue your learning process. And of course, we're hoping that you'll have some fun while we're at it.
And also, because we might have a little bit of extra time, if you do have any questions, and I'm already seeing Ray popping one in there, feel free to put them in, and at the end of each section, if we have a couple minutes of extra time, we'll try to answer any questions that we can get to. So feel free to keep putting them in there. We are watching and seeing
what's
there.
We'll take a few minutes at the end of each module and see if we can answer some of those questions for you. So I'm going to throw it over to you and let you actually demo the game that we're going to be looking at today. Walk us through some of the code that we've used. And
right.
Again, this isn't best practices, obviously. This is a demo to show you what we want to do.
But the code for its game, we kept as simple as possible, just to put it together so there would be no confusions there. We have your basic objects in the scene. We have things like a directional light. We have game controller, which is just going to be an object in the Unity engine, just an empty game object pretty much, that has our one script that's going to control everything. And we'll take a look at that in a second. And we are using some GUI text, so you can see that those work just fine porting over and everything like that. Typical camera, nothing really crazy on here. There's no actually any extra layers or nothing. We have a typical skybox, just using a background blue, and so on through there.
Yeah, we just set it up to be a standard camera that's stationary, doesn't really move.
That's right, just your standard setup and everything. Just so we had a simple game to be able to show you the more advanced things later on as we start to port this over. We have some basic geometry. Actually, I'll just zoom this up a little bit here. If it'll let me. Why won't you go full screen? Did they change the shortcut on me? Yeah, we'll just flip over to default mode so everything's a little bit bigger. So basically, the game's going to have just a simple ring, two sumo wrestlers, each of which have a box collider on it for some physics and a rigid body so that they can move around. One is the player controller here in blue. He's the player sumo wrestler. And on the red side, we have an AI-controlled little sumo as well, and he's got his own little script. And then other than that, the only real other thing in the environment are the GUI text for the timers and so on that we'll see. And if I boot this up here, I'll just do that again. I'll maximize it. There we go. So I can run around as my little blue guy. Got the little red guy trying to run around, trying to push me out of bounds. You know, you can fight with them. We got our little round timer coming up. See if I can bait him down into this side here. Oh, is he going to fall for it? Okay, I got him here now, maybe. And there we go. So, pushed him out. I win. You know, you start over again, and continue on. So pretty basic game, but it has more or less everything that we're going to need to demo what we want to do today. If we go and take a look at some of the code, just so you can see what's on the code side of things. Bring up the player controller here. And where is Zoom? Let's see if I can zoom this code up a bit. There we go. Let's get this nice and big. Don't need all this room for files over there. We got some line numbers. Perfect. All right, so here's the player controller class. I mean, got some public private variables, nothing special. Just for your player speed, the movement amount, whether or not he's active or been forced out of bounds, the basic things that we need for the game. And we got a couple of getters and setters so that we can check from other scripts, most notably things like the game controller. So we can check to see if the player has been forced out of bounds. So we can set whether or not he's active. We can check whether or not he's out of bounds, for example. And the update itself, if the player is active, we go ahead and let him run around or do whatever he's trying to do. And right here, you can already see that we're doing some platform-specific coding.
Yeah.
Okay. Just
we'll
to show you
a little bit more about that later on.
Exactly, and we'll talk about how to set this up, and so you can pay attention to different platforms and stuff. But right here, I'm just checking if we are on the Windows Phone 8 player, and if not, then I'm going to use this chunk of code down here. Basically, the difference is using different kind of input for the controls. So here you can see I'm using get axis horizontal, whereas up here we're using acceleration and so on to control it with the phone. So I'm going to do a little bit of accelerometer demo basically later on for that, for the accelerometer controls, and that's really how the player moves around. Other than that, the only other thing we have is a little on collision enter check, which is just checking for an out of ring state. There's a little collision we put underneath the floor basically that if you fall out and touch it, we know that, you know, you've been kicked out of the ring and you've lost. So that's really all there is to the player controller. The AI controller, a little bit more coding obviously, because we got to do some AI. The player is not really going to influence this script. Here we can pick the speed we want. We got a little surge multiplier, so how fast the AI can shove you around if he wants to. So for balance reasons, the usual balancing. And then we have things like the player's transform, so we know where he is. We can track who it is that our target is for the AI. And again, active is out of bounds. And then we have a couple of state variable booleans that we're using just to decide whether or not he should be trying to surge forward and push you off, or whether or not he's currently trying to dodge. And of course, timers for checking both of those states as well, or keeping track of how long he's been trying to do that action. Again, a couple getters and setters, active, out of bounds, and so on. When we initially start up the AI, we want to find the player. So we're going to do a normal game object, find with tag player, grab his transform. So we have a reference for that. We never have to do it each iteration. You never want to really do a find with tag.
Yeah, that really slows your code down. So
that's right. You don't want to do it every update. Just once would be great. So since the player is never going to change, our target's never going to change, we grab it once during initialization, really, and then we sit on it and keep that reference for the rest of the game. Surge time and dodge time, we're just randomly initializing them somewhere between 1 to 3 seconds. So initially he'll start to move forward and then likely dodge before he tries to do a real big shove. So he'll sort of get the player out of position and then try to ram him right off the screen. So that's just sort of how we have the AI set up to start. Our update function again, we've got to check if he's active. And if he is, we've got to constantly decrement these surge timers and dodge timers so that it gets ready to either start a new surge or a new dodge or to end the current one that he's currently doing. If the surge time or the dodge time get to be less than zero, we toggle whatever state he is, either pushing or not, or dodging or not, and we reset the timer again to that similar random range of time for the next setup of whatever he's going to do.
Give some nice variety to our AI.
Yeah, it just mixes it up a little bit. The player can't necessarily guess what's coming next because it's going to alternate, and then eventually, you know, some of these timings might get off where he actually gets two dodges in before the next surge or one surge between two other dodges or and so on and so on. So
it doesn't get repetitive, so when you're playing it over and over again, you don't feel like he's just doing the same steps.
Right. It just keeps it a little bit more interesting and keeps the player on their toes. In order to do the surge, we need to alter, obviously, the AI's position, and we simply do that by taking his current position, and we're going to use the move towards function, which is a handy function that hopefully everybody knows about, because it's great to have. It's attached to the Vector3 library there, and to use the move towards, you basically just need to specify your current position, the position you'd like to go, and then the maximum distance delta that's allowed to change this one push. So what we've done is we've decided that it's going to start wherever he is. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then he's going to move to whatever the player's position in X and Y is. So he's just charging at the player.
Yeah.
That's all we have to do. And we tell him to move a distance based on his speed value multiplied by whatever the surge multiplier is in this case, so not his normal walking speed, but an increased value. And then we take the fraction of time that has elapsed to do that.
And because our sumos don't leave the ground, we don't really care about the y-axis.
Right.
We only care about the x and the z.
Yeah. There's no flying sumo attacks in this game, so we've dropped out the y. I know maybe you've seen some other games where you would really like that, but we didn't include it in our 8-bit version of sumo wrestling. All right, so the dodge maneuver, similar in terms of, we're just going to really be manipulating the transform position of the AI's block. But first we need to decide where should we go to dodge. So we're going to calculate a direction. And I find the easiest way to calculate a dodge direction, especially when you want to do something like a circle strafe or just strafing left and right, is to take the cross product of two vectors. Now, one of those vectors is obviously the direction towards your opponent that you're facing.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so we take the player's current position, and we simply subtract the AI's current position. That gives you a vector pointing from one to the other. All right, and if you can't remember the order, it's always B minus A, where A is where you start and B is where you're going. So B minus A. So in this case, we're getting the vector from the AI to the player. All right, so that's the way you remember it. And then the other vector that we're going to cross that with is the transform up vector. And that's just taking the current sumo AI's transform, grabbing whatever which way it thinks is up, and since, again, there's no rolling or actual flying or anything like that, up is exactly what we want. It's straight up on the Y direction. So we're going to cross it with that. So if you think about it, we're facing the sumo wrestler, and we are taking the up direction. When you do a cross product, if you take your hand and you wrap your fingers from one vector towards the other, it's going to give you effectively the perpendicular vector to that. So I'm going to get the vector to the side that's mm-hmm. perpendicular. So now I'm going to move to the right. That's the direction we've just calculated by doing that cross product. Okay, so we now know we can go right or left, depending on whichever way you've flipped this order of these two vectors around. So we have our direction now, and now again we can just use our move towards function that we saw just a minute ago, except we want to start where we are, and we want to move to really where the AI is plus that direction vector, so in that move in that direction. So that'll make him jump to the right or left, depending on the order again, by an amount of his speed times the amount of time that went by again. So it's just a little step to left or right. Now he's going to do this multiple updates, so he's going to get a good circle strafe going, because each time he's going to be facing a slightly different, looking at the player a little bit from more of an angle each time he takes a step around. So this will cause that circle strafing kind of movement that we want when you get rushed, you sort of step out to the side a bit, and then continue to push the guy right out the ring. That's effectively what we've just created, just by doing that little bit of a cross product to get the right vector, and then that vector is going to change over time as we shift around the guy. So it's a neat, simple little AI maneuver that we can effectively pull off in two lines of code here in Unity, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so other than that, we have our normal moving forward kind of motion. And we just use the move towards, take the AI's current position and move them again towards the X and Z position of the player. Again, at the speed times delta time. So if you don't find he's hard enough or what you want him to move a little bit quicker, you could tweak that AI speed value. You could tweak that surge multiplier so that in general he moves normal, but he has a little bit more push to him. You could put a difficulty system in here if you wanted, right? Every time you beat him, this surge multiplier goes up by a little bit the next time around and so on. So there is a little bit of area to expand in this AI if you wanted to. Other than that, the only other function in the AI is the onCollision enter, which again is just checking for that out of ring touch so that we know that you've lost, or that the AI has lost, rather. Okay. So other than that one, the last script in here really of any consequence at the moment is the game controller mono behavior itself, which again we just attached to that empty game object floating in space, because it's really just sort of the referee or the manager watching to see what's going on.
It's a good way of putting it, the referee.
It doesn't really play any part in the game itself, but it is an object, it does exist, and we have this script attached to it. Again, if we had a sound manager or something else, maybe you would just stick this script on that game object as well, but we don't, so we just made an empty game object. So we have done it in such a way that there can only be one game controller at a time, so we've effectively turned it into a singleton class, for those of you with a computer science background. And this instance variable, it's static, it's private, there's only one. The only person that can actually give it to you is the class itself, which has a public static accessor, which is just a getter. There is no setter, so you can't create one. We can get it, and it just verifies that, first of all, if there is no instance, then we're going to make a new instance of myself, and that becomes the instance. Otherwise, we just return the one that already exists, and that's it. All right, so that's it for that controller in terms of how to make it a singleton. Other than that, we have a bunch of private variables for what it's controlling. It's going to keep track of the player and the AI for now. We also need a reference to the player controller, the AI controller, and those two GUI texts that we're updating the game time so that you see how long it's taking you to push the sumo out or how fast he's going to beat you and so on. With the round timer is the internal variable we use to keep track of that that's going to be displayed by this timer text GUI. We also have a couple of game states in here, so we made a little enumeration so that the game manager can or game controller can keep track of what it's doing or what the state of the game is at the moment. We have the current starting state, so it's waiting for you to tap, basically, or click the mouse button to start playing the game, and then you're into the normal playing mode, and then whether or not you've won or lost, what message we want to display, and wait for you to push a certain button to get back into the swing of things.
Simple game state, man.
Right. Well, yeah, we'll see. It's just a simple game state management system. And as you can see, we need to keep track of our current state. We should start out as start. Makes sense. And then in the start function, really, we're just going to look for that player. We're going to look for that AI. We only need to do it once per execution of the game. So we do it in our start method, and then we have those references. We also need to grab our GUI text and our timer text. We just search for them. There's not a lot of objects in the game, so we don't really have to worry about any overhead here, so finding them in this manner is fine. We could have also made public variables that you would have dragged the actual game object into during level setup, but we only have one level, so there's no point in really having all that extra overhead. This is just fine. But again, not necessarily best practices, but something that we can just throw together quick for a demo. We then grab our player component and our AI controller, our player controller, which are components on the player and AI, which we found right here. So we grab those so we don't have to keep doing this get component lookup every update, because that would also be slow and there's no point to doing that. And finally, we initialize our round timer to zero because it's going to count up. It's not you have 30 seconds to win. It's how long did it actually take you to get this guy out? That's sort of your high score thing, which we'll use later on. Maybe as a cool little splash tile or teasing your friends or something like that. So that brings us down to our update method, which, as you can see, it's set up with a basic switch case to run our game states. When we start out in our start, the message we want to display is, click, tap, or press a key to start. So pretty much push anything.
Yeah, covering all our bases, basically.
Yeah, that's right. And because we don't necessarily know, we haven't decided which platform we want to roll this out on yet, or when we're going to roll it out for all of them, since we're going to do the Windows Store today and the phone today, for example. So the nice thing about the input manager in Unity is actually there is an any key Boolean that you can just look at. You don't have to do all this trolling through every key to see if any of them are true that you do have to do in some of the other engines, or when you're building up your own engine, asking Windows and going through and checking every single thing. So we can just say input.anykey, and if that's true, we know they've pushed something. We can now hide that GUI text. Okay, so we just set it to false so the message goes away. And we activate both the player and the enemy, and we change our state to playing, and the game has started. So now once we're in the playing state, really the only thing that the game manager cares to do, or the game controller rather, is check if one of those two players is out of bounds. So if they do exit the arena, we switch to the lost state. In the case of the player leaving, if the AI leaves the area, then we switch to the game state of one. And that's it. Otherwise, we just continue to tick away at our round timer, increasing the time as we go, and we display our updated timer text with that round timer, which we've limited to 2 decimals, just so that you don't see a large string of floats out there. Could have also put it to integer, but we found that you'd start tying each other's high scores too close.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
Gave you 2 decimals just to really fight over, you know, 1/100 of a second better than your buddy, and that's fine. So then we have the win state and the lost state, which really, again, just enable that GUI text and pop up a you won or you lost message, and then waits for us to hit return, to get in. Okay, now again, this is going to have to change when we do the phone or something like that. We can't leave it like that. Or, well, I guess some of the phones might have that, but you'd have to pull up your keyboard somehow and get to it. It could be a little tricky. So we'll probably change that again later on as one of those, oops, we forgot, we're doing multiple platform kind of issues. All right. So other than that, we have a couple other little helper functions that we're already preparing that we're going to do the phone. Mm-hmm. So we've got a little callback for the back button press. Just so we can display and show you that, you know, you are listening for a back button or the back button on the phone and it has been touched. It doesn't do anything in this game. And then we have our pause state. So if you pause the game, we again show paused and whether or not the time scale effectively becomes 0 so that Unity itself stops updating all the players. And then an unpause redoes that, and resetting whenever we win, putting the people the player back to his proper position and rotation, putting the AI back to its proper position and rotation to start a new game, and setting them to deactive for now, and then going back to the game state starts whenever we call it reset. Other than that, you got to quit, basic Unity Engine application.quit, and we're out of there. And then this save high score stuff we'll look at later on, because right now we're just storing it in the player preferences file, but we're going to play around with it a little bit and do some other features with that later on. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. Getting the high score, update tile. We'll go through all this stuff.
Yeah, we'll walk through that later on.
Yep.
So yeah, like it's a pretty basic game, but that's the cool thing about Unity, right? You can get something up and running really quickly without having to spend a lot of time coding.
Exactly. It doesn't take a lot of effort if you have planned out things, and especially once you're familiar with the tool, to do something simple like this to quickly get it out there. And then roll it out to as many platforms as you can. There you go, I won. I can just taunt him now and laugh. So, yeah. But no, it's a great little tool, and being able to port it over to the... Oh, I almost had him there real quick. getting it over to the store as simply and easily as possible on whatever platform is always good. So seeing how fast we can do this in the Windows Store is going to sort of be the great thing about it, mm-hmm. as we show everybody today.
Definitely. So yeah, that's a good little overview of the game and what we're going to be playing around with today.
That's right.
So I guess we'll take a little time. We'll talk about what you actually need to get started with the porting.
Sure.
Okay. So the first thing you're going to need, obviously, is Unity 4.3. So either the Unity free version or the Pro version will work. The add-ons to publish to the Windows Phone and Windows Store are free, even for Pro users. Which is a huge plus, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Us indie devs, we don't have a lot of money and we want to get our game out there, so that's definitely a help. You're going to need Visual Studio 2013. Now, I personally suggest you use Ultimate or Premium, but of course, Express will work.
Yes, that's true.
You're going to need a copy of Windows 8 or later. If you don't own a copy of Windows 8 license, you can get a free 90-day evaluation version. If you're running on a Mac, you can install this on Apple hardware if you use something like Boot Camp or Parallels. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're not leaving the Mac guys out.
Yeah, no.
Of course, you're going to need a Windows Developer account. This is what you're going to actually use to submit your game to the store. It used to actually be two different accounts. You used to have a Windows Phone account or developer phone account and a Windows Store developer account.
Has been nicely wrapped together.
Yes, it's been nicely wrapped together, so you don't need to worry about that. So yeah, that's what you need to get started on the Windows Store and building for the Windows Store and on Windows 8.1. We'll take a look at the phone now. So for the phone, of course, again, you're going to need Unity. Same thing, you know, it's free for even the Pro versions users, so that's really good. You're going to need the Windows Phone SDK. That's something you're definitely going to want to download. Now, that does install the Express version if you download it. But if you've already got you know, Ultimate or Premium installed, that's going to work just fine.
Right.
You're going to need, again, a copy of Windows 8 or later. You know, again, you can get it for free if you don't have a license or, you know, try it out anyway for at least 90 days. And then you Apple users, you can still, you know, install it on that. Again, you're going to need a Windows Developer account. There's two reasons you need this for the phone. One, again, is to push it to the store. And the second one is you're going to actually need this to unlock your phone device.
Right, so you can test it out on the phone and make sure that the hardware is functioning exactly as the editor in Unity and so on.
Exactly. Now, the thing you're going to need here for building for the Windows Phone is you're going to actually need a device. As of the time that I've made these slides, and you know that might change because of course it's going to be available on demand. So you know definitely check the web to make sure that what we're telling you today is accurate because Unity is going through a lot of development and very rapidly. So you know some of these things might have changed, but as of the time of writing this, Unity 4.3 does not support using the emulator to actually test these builds. So you're going to need to get your hands on a Windows Phone device. So yeah, that's pretty much all you need to get ready to get going and building. Any questions in the chat that we can take right now?
We're going to post the link to the project. Somebody already asked for that. We will pop it into the chat here too since you can't grab it from the stream there and if you missed it when it went by. Just checking here. Why do this in Mono Develop and not Visual Studios?
Well, actually, a little bit later on, I'm going to show you how to bring your Unity assembly code into Visual Studio so you can work on it inside of Visual Studio as well.
Correct, yeah. What I was demonstrating was just the game in its natural habitat that you probably would have written it already. If you're porting a game to the Windows Store and Windows Phone, you must have already written it in Unity probably, right? So I was just showing you a common game that would have looked like and how we would have developed it already in Unity, in Mono Develop, and so on. But yes, we will be bringing it over into Visual Studios and we'll wrap it up.
We didn't want to show all our tricks off of the first module, right? So
I
had to keep something for later on.
So yeah, there's your answer for that one. I can't remember who that was. I missed Ruzak, I think it was. So let's see, other ones in here. Somebody's already answering that one, so I won't do that. No, that looks like everything for right now. There's a couple other more technical ones, and then which maybe look like Unity-specific questions. So we might bring that up after the break then, I guess, if we come up with something for that.
Well, that sounds good. Well, why don't we take about a 10-minute break?
Sure.
When we come back in, we'll talk about porting your game and what you think things you should consider while you're porting.
All right.
See you in 10.